You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Hello and welcome to the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show. I'm your host, Dr. Kristen Lyerly, and I have a secret. Ever since I was a little kid, I've been fascinated by the sinking of the Edmund Fitzgerald. Con, do you know what the Edmund Fitzgerald was?
I mean, I'm iffy on it. I know what it is, but also at the same time, I would like to learn more.
Uh-huh. Like, what do you know about it?
That it was off the coast of Door County, right?
No.
Oh.
Different Great Lake.
Like, okay, now I completely forgot.
Do you know, like, is it the song that you know about?
Yeah, or I know the song.
Uh-huh.
We played it on Nightlight a couple times.
Oh, I bet you did. Yeah, we're going to get into the song, and okay, that's going to be a fun part of this episode. Yeah. But most of us have heard the story of the Edmund Fitzgerald because of the song. That was that November night in 1975. I was alive. Tom, I don't think you were.
I was not.
I have a memory of this happening, actually.
You remember John Brogan?
Yeah.
Okay. He was born November 10th, 1975.
Are so you
he
kidding
gets reminded.
Me?
Yes. I'm not kidding. I mean, every birthday, he's reminded of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
That's so fun because John's actually going to be on the show in a couple weeks.
You got to ask him that.
I'm totally going to ask him that.
What great historic moment besides you happened on November 10th, 1975?
I love that. All right. Well, on November 10th, 1975, the ship and her crew of 29 vanished into the icy waters of the Great Lake they call Gitche-Gumee. Right?
Oh, you had a great singing voice.
Thank you very much. I've sung
You're
the song.
You're in the wrong program. Yeah. I mean, it is a good program, but
I have sung the song many, many times. But you hear the voice of Tom Nelson here. Tom is my guest today. That song was not just a piece of folklore for Tom. Growing up here in Northeast Wisconsin mm-hmm. in the 70s and 80s, it was constantly on the radio. And it, in many ways, it was the soundtrack to our childhood.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So what Tom couldn't have known way back then was that the same forces that sent the Edmund Fitzgerald to the bottom of the lake were quietly dismantling the manufacturing economy all around us, including the paper mill that literally cast its shadow on your family's church. We're going to get into all of that today. Uh-huh. But today, nearly 50 years later, Tom Nelson has written the book that connects those dots, arguing that the Edmund Fitzgerald wasn't just a maritime disaster, it was a preview of the corporate negligence and failed oversight that would hollow out American manufacturing. And unlike most people who write about these problems, you actually have fought to save jobs and mm-hmm. you've won.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Some of the I'd say capstones of my public service.
Yeah.
Have been working with paper workers, mill workers in our neighboring hometowns, Littleton, Kaukauna, and it was very important. I mean, it was the foundation for the economy, and you know, I may not have appreciated it way back then, though, but looking back, it has so much to do with having a safe community, with friends whose parents were able to have good paying jobs in the mm-hmm. virtuous cycle of the first order. And so it has a lot to do with who I became and where we are today.
Mm-hmm. It sure does. So why the fascination with the Edmund Fitzgerald?
Well, I think it's I think it's really the same thing or phenomenon that people who find themselves interested in this, drawn to this, in some cases obsessed with this.
Yeah.
And one of the, if you will, the undercurrent of this narrative has been this diaspora of people who find themselves very interested in this topic. It can be anything from people who are interested in shipwrecks, in diving. There could be people that knew some of the crew members, mm-hmm. Folks that were in the industry. Tim Nixon, the attorney down the way from here, he sailed on the Great Lakes from about 1976 to 1985 or something. So he knew this very well. And there's a lot of folks like that that have an interest. And one of the subplots was the intermixing of this diaspora. And there were flashpoints mm-hmm. where you had this former private investigator, or I'm sorry, this former police officer retired from Michigan who took out, you know, massive loans to rent a barge, to rent equipment to dive the Fitzgerald just because he was obsessed with this. He really couldn't put his finger on it, but there was something about this. And yeah, you were talking
emotional.
It is. And, you know, when people ask what made the difference with this versus so many other unfortunate incidents, it's because of the song. I mean, you cannot discount the fact that you have this staple rock ballad, you know, a very powerful ballad that's been a staple on classic rock stations, that even people like, you know, Khan, you know, I think he's a little younger than we are. So it's kind of been passed. It's been passed on from generation to generation. And then parallel to that, you also have generations of family members of the fallen crew members. Mm-hmm. And some of them are very, you know, of course, very protective of their deceased loved ones, the legacy and so forth. And so I was knocking on doors, as I've done before, around the state, and I met some of those folks. And so they're in the book as well.
Wow. And we're going to get to some of those stories. But first, for our friends like Khan, remind us what the story of the Edmund Fitzgerald is. What are the basics that people know?
The basics is it was an iron ore tanker, and it was based in Minnesota, up near the Iron Range, and it went back and forth between Minnesota and Toledo, Ohio. It was nicknamed the Toledo Express. And its life, it went from about 1957 to 1975. And over the course, she would carry about 30,000 tons of taconite ore. And so taconite ore was the mineral left over shortly after World War II that was exhausted from the mines in northern Minnesota and Canada. And so you would take the taconite ore and bring it all the way down to places like Detroit, like Toledo, where it would go to steel mills and then be, you know, used to build cars and trucks. And really the entire American economy was carried literally and figuratively by the Fitzgerald and other fleets of iron ore tankers.
Mm-hmm. And there's still a lot of taconite produced up in the Iron Range.
Yes, so that's still going to this day, though. I mean, not what it was like once upon a time, but that was back in the 60s and the 70s. The iron ore ships on the Great Lakes were a fundamental, foundational component of American manufacturing and thus the American economy.
So what happened to the Edmund Fitzgerald?
Well, the book I'm not going to go too far into because, as they say, you have to buy the book. But a lot of people who are interested in the topic are focused on the question, how did it sink? And so it set off from Superior that on her last voyage on November 9th, it was sunk around 7:15 p.m. November 10th, and it was about 20 miles away from Sault Ste. Marie. So that was the first stop along its way. In this case, it was going down to Detroit. And it was a ship that had been pushed beyond its limits. It was only supposed to carry about 20,000 tons of ore, and it was being pushed to about 26,000 tons. And so this was a ship that was one of the largest, and it just kept getting hammered, just, you know, more and more and more. They tried to carry as much ore as possible, and it wasn't kept up. And there's a whole chapter that talks about how there was not just lax oversight on the part of the Coast Guard, but also the Bureau of Shipping, and they should have known. It was run down. They were doing patchwork on the hull. This ship should not have sailed in the first place.
It was not seaworthy.
It was not seaworthy. And so we talk about, you know, was it a rogue wave? Because one came past the Anderson, which was following it. Did it take on too much water? So there's a lot of theories. So people are focused on that, and rightfully so. And the book, dives into that, so to speak. That what I'm interested in it is how they got to November 9th in the first place, the history of this ship and what was going on. And so you have a company that has the incentive to push these ships harder, heavier, and longer. And November is about the time that these companies shut down for the winter. Mm-hmm. And they were going into a really difficult season. November, because some push into December, November is the one month that has the most shipwrecks because of that. It has the confluence of both bad weather, and then a lot of ships continue to be pushed through in November and into December.
Mm-hmm. And when the ship sank, everyone on board died.
Right.
It was a national tragedy that captivated the nation.
Yes.
You are listening to Tom Nelson. He is the author of the new book, Wrecked, the Edmund Fitzgerald and the Sinking of the American Economy. So bring these things together for me. How does this shipwreck that we grew up with, that we've been captivated by, how does that reflect what's going on, what was going on, what is still going on in the rest of the country?
That is a very good question. It is one of the questions that I sought to answer. And this entire subject took me about 222 pages to explain with very small font. That's the publisher.
In other words, buy the book.
Buy the book, yeah. I look at the Edmund Fitzgerald as, you know, what it is, a vehicle. Mm-hmm. A vehicle that carried, literally and figuratively, the American economy, mm-hmm. which in this case was taconite ore, and it was foundational to the economy. And no one has talked about, you know, the Fitzgerald, its life up until that point, the purpose, the role that it fit into the economy. And then there's been very few stories about the families. Mm-hmm. And so taking this all together, this was about corporate malfeasance. This was an utter failure on the part of government oversight and a number of other factors. So now you take that 50 years into the future. Mm-hmm. This was, as you mentioned, a national tragedy. And when you have tragedies, you try to learn lessons. So what lessons have we learned from the Fitzgerald 50 years ago that we have applied today?
And why has it taken us 50 years to have this conversation?
Well, exactly. This is either the first or the second peer-reviewed book on the topic. So you have heard about this. There have been some books, but up until this point, they've been kind of narrowly focused on the shipwreck. And there really hasn't been a look into other aspects, and with the exception of maybe one other book, nothing has been peer-reviewed through an academic press. So by mm-hmm. peer-reviewed, you know, we have legit experts in this topic, looked through it, gave some suggestions, and gave the thumbs up to proceed. The only way that you can go forward with a book in an academic press, in this case, Michigan State, is to pass peer review. So it's a good question. This is a very important topic. This was a national tragedy. There are, I think, obvious lessons to take from this. And one, no one has written on that. And number two, here we are 50 years later, the government and our, you know, and the economy as a whole, we have not learned those lessons, or at least taken those lessons to heart.
We have not learned those lessons, which means that we are doomed to repeat them.
Yes.
Unless we do. But yes, we are going to help learn those lessons.
We are.
And that's why we're here. When we come back from this break, Tom, I want to talk about the families and the stories mm-hmm. that you've heard, both interviewing folks for these books or for this book and knocking on doors.
Yes.
All right. This is Dr. Kristen Lyerly. You are listening to the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
The legend lives on from the Chippewa on down. The big lake they call Gitchagumi.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lyerly, and I'm here with Tom Nelson, who recently wrote a book about the ship, the Edmund Fitzgerald, that went down on the Great Lake they call Gitche-Gumee. We are going to explore the music.
You are a remarkable singer, by the way, though.
Oh, come on. Don't. Oh, yeah, actually. Tom's book is called Wrecked, The Edmund Fitzgerald and the Sinking of the American Economy. And in our first segment, we talked a little bit about why write the book. We recapped what the American public thinks of when they think of the Edmund Fitzgerald, but also talked a little bit about what it meant, how it was a reflection of what was happening in the greater American manufacturing economy. And Tom, you talked with a lot of families to pull this book together. Tell us some of those stories.
So, before we begin, since you began with the Gordon Lightfoot song, you know, doing the research, I learned some things about many aspects of the Fitzgerald, including that song. And the tune for that song, Gordon Lightfoot actually wrote the tune before he did it. And so he was waiting for some story, some, you know, because it's a Celtic folklore tune. And so he was, it was already written and he was waiting for a story, you know, lyrics for that. And so when he heard about the sinking of Fitzgerald, he thought,
it just,
you know,
came
that's
together.
It.
Yeah.
And one story has not been told is that when he first recorded that, maybe in a room this size, he turned the lights all the way down.
Oh, wow.
And almost off. And because when he sang it, he wanted to sing from the perspective of the crew members, how they felt when it was going down. So it's really, it's a really powerful song, and the backstory there's equally powerful.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to hear a few other versions of it.
Oh, it's great.
I know.
Okay, so you want to talk about some of the people.
Families, yes.
There were a number of, what struck me is a number of the relatives, particularly brothers, and maybe to an extent sons. You could line them all up and they could look like brothers. I mean, this was representative of a part of our society where people worked hard. They might not have gotten a lot of education, but they came from very small towns in rural parts, whether it's Michigan or Wisconsin or Minnesota, and they would go out, you know, on the lakes for 8 or 9 months and maybe see the families once or twice here. They would be able to put phone calls when they got to port down in Ohio.
Yeah, this is pre-cell phones, friends.
Yes, it was. There were no cell phones. And so the stories they told me were very compelling. I was knocking on doors outside of Iron River, which is close to Superior, between Superior and Washburn. And thanks to Google.com, I was able to track down one of the relatives of Michael Armagost, who is one of the engineers. And I started knocking on doors because I had a couple of addresses, and I found him. And he was in this kind of cabin log house, way off the beaten path. And he came out, sat down on a lawn chair, and we talked for about an hour. But, you know, what I gathered from these conversations and speaking to these people, these family members all appear to be people that had lived a long and hard and difficult life. And having a conversation and knowing that every time the song comes on, they're reminded about that, or if they're known in their community. Yeah. Oh, by the way, you know, Fred's brother was Michael Armagost and he went down with Fitzgerald. So they have that for the entire life. And in the case of Michael Armagost's brother up in Iron River, he told me that I was the first to approach him to interview him on this topic.
Really?
Yeah, so that had been almost 1, 2, 3, that had been 48 years since it went down. So there's these stories, some have been told, but some have not been told.
Do you tell them in your book?
Yes, yes. And there was one that was very powerful, one from Oliver Champeau, and his daughter, who lives down in Milwaukee. She and I had a phone conversation. I had actually knocked on her door too, and she wasn't there. And she talked about how he was sailing, and it was her prom. So she was a junior in high school, and she was asked to go to prom, and she's just like, oh my gosh, oh, you know. So she calls her dad because she and her dad were very close. and, you know, going through what's going to happen and I need money, you know, what should I do here? And he went through everything. He said, you know, I will, you know, we have the money to pay for this. You know, I'll fund this, I'll help this and so forth. And, you know, moments like this, major life moments. And she said that when she was married, how many years later, and she's being walked down the aisle and she's up at the altar and she looks down. And she looked across and like, is my dad coming there? No, my dad's not. But she was thinking about him in these major milestones of her life. And she gave a rendering of just a heart-wrenching story of how she has this recurring nightmare where she's out in the water and she sees this hand come up from the water trying to grab her. Imagine that for her entire life.
Wow.
She is haunted by this memory. Mm-hmm. And there's stories like that from all these family members. I was fortunate to talk to several. I try to include as many as possible, but very powerful.
Yeah. And you're the first person. That is shocking to me, given all of the coverage
And
all of the, I mean, we took a pilgrimage there when I was a little kid, and I remember it, not understanding what was happening, but also just feeling very deeply and thinking that these families were taken care of, but they weren't, were they, Tom?
No, they weren't. They were not. This is a classic case of corporations putting profits before people. Mm-hmm. It's not just today, but it has been going on for so long. And you would think after a disaster like this, a tragedy, we would learn about it. And yes, there were some changes. There were some improvements, because before the Fitzgerald, during and before the Fitzgerald, they didn't even have basic equipment to be able to direct themselves. So very, very, very sad story.
Very sad story. And we're going to talk more about that. And we're going to talk a little bit more about you, Tom Nelson, when we come back. All right. This is Dr. Kristen Lierley. You are listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show.
The wind and the wires made a tattletale sound in the wave.
Legend lives on from the Chippewa on down. Never gives up or dead when the sky.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley, and I'm here with Tom Nelson, who just wrote an incredible new book about the Edmund Fitzgerald. It is called Wrecked: The Edmund Fitzgerald and the Sinking of the American Economy. It's not just about the shipwreck. It is about how the shipwreck is a reflection of what's been happening with our manufacturing
right.
economy all the way back 50 years ago, but still now. And as we've been sitting here, before I say this, that song, that remake of the Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald was done by, hold on, let me look it up, Headstones. They are a Canadian band. Apparently, they are quite a Canadian band. They're very popular. So they're touring all over the provinces. So if you liked that version, you can go to, I guess, Manitoba.
And maybe they'll come to Green Bay. Maybe they'll come to Wisconsin.
Maybe they will. We've got one of those coming up, too. But beyond the music, Tom was just showing me some pictures from interviews, conversations that he had with family members as you were putting this book together. And many of them have never been approached, have never had the opportunity to talk about their experiences and how they're feeling. And Tom, I know you. You are a community guy. You are somebody who wants to solve problems and bring people together. I mean, that's why you wrote this book. That's why you've written other books. What was it like for you?
It was not easy. It was a confluence of, it wasn't easy. It was, here you're meeting someone who is living, breathing history.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a family member of a fallen Fitzgerald crew member. I mean, this is, so you kind of want to handle the interaction like a porcelain doll. Like, this is something that either no one is, you know, able to do, or in some cases, thought to do. And so the first thing was to be very respectful and to, you know, ask a couple questions, but let them take it from there. And they really opened up.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I think, for them was very cathartic, because I was talking to Oliver Champeau's daughter and, you know, she kind of, you know, it wasn't that easy.
Yeah.
And, you know, talk through it. And I kind of apologize. No. I mean, it was important for her to tell these stories, because there are very few first generation that I could find, one first generation family member. who is still alive, and Deborah Champeau would be a second generation, and mm-hmm. she was the daughter of Oliver. They had very compelling stories. I wanted to be respectful, and at the same time too, thinking, how could they have lived as long as they did, 48 years, carrying this trauma and this hurt?
But think about what it was like back then. I mean, you know, having been a young child in the mid-70s, we didn't talk about feelings. There was no therapy, really.
Right.
That was like, if you went to therapy, that was, you were troubled. So we were, especially people who lived up on the Iron Range and people who worked in these kinds mm-hmm. of industries, didn't have a place where they were allowed to express their feelings. So I'm guessing, and based on what you're telling me, that a lot of these people just kind of swallowed it and went on with their lives.
Yeah. And it was not just, I mean, first and foremost, it was emotional, it was psychological, though. But even up to that point, because the paychecks coming from crew members on ships of the Great Lakes mm-hmm. were some of the biggest paychecks going to these small towns, whether it's Superior or Iron River or Sturgeon Bay, when, you know, this was a major source of income for the family. And not just, you know, a wife, but also their parents or their siblings. And in fact, when some of the younger crew members would get married and the income would go a different direction, mm-hmm. there was a lot of tension and sometimes fights between in-laws and spouses. Mm-hmm. And so you can imagine how that only is exacerbated, both the economic and the emotional. So in the short term, they were thinking, how do I make ends meet?
Yeah.
And there's another chapter where I talk about the legal cases. And that's another aspect, is clearly there would have been lawsuits, and there were. We haven't heard about that. And some of the families had decent settlements. Some of them settled quickly with the insurance companies because the insurance companies were taking advantage of them.
Right.
And that's another facet too. So now you have people who have lost a loved one. They no longer have this income stream, and they just got ripped off by the insurance company when they could have, you know, taken these folks to the cleaners, mm-hmm. and some did. And one of the attorneys that handled three family cases, one of the attorneys, Toby Markovich, is a practicing attorney up in Superior, Wisconsin. He's 93 years old.
Wow.
But he had a front row seat to that aftermath.
Wow. As you are telling the story, the thing that I hear is justice. You want justice mm-hmm. for these families. You want justice for the people who died and justice for the communities that suffered as a result of this. And this does not at all surprise me, because I don't know if I ever told you the story, but the first time I ever heard about the incredible Tom Nelson from Kaukauna was when you had a sleepover party in the assembly.
Oh, yeah. I get that about once a week. Yes.
But you were, just to pivot a little bit, you were the youngest member ever elected. Is that right?
At the time.
At the time. Yeah. And then soon after that, you became the leader.
Majority leader. So my third term. So I was there from 2005 to 2011, and I was majority leader from 2008 to 2010.
Hey, so take that experience and take your mindset back then and put it into what's happening right now and how people are begging for young people mm-hmm. to step up and use their voices so that we don't have to deal with the politics of the Chuck Schumers and the Donald Trumps right. and the Nancy Pelosi, like right. that older generation, enough already, we need more young mm-hmm. voices. Mm-hmm. How did that shape your journey as a leader here in Northeast Wisconsin and beyond?
Right. And it wasn't just when I ran for office in 2004, this goes back to my time growing up. And I think we were talking about this. I think we were within like two miles of each other.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I just learned at a very young age the importance of giving back to your community. For my dad, it was starting a church and helping people in a religious context. For me, it was, getting elected and trying to make constructive social and economic change for my state and for my community that would make a real difference in their lives. And we were able to do that. It was a very rewarding experience. experience. I'm now doing as county executive out of Allegheny County. But the nice thing is what I've seen, especially in the last couple of terms, is we do have more and more young people. And in fact, the assembly, I have been there now about 15 years though, but I think with the exception of one person in the Democratic caucus, they're all new and they're young. And so I think there is great, tremendous promise.
I'm really excited about some of the leaders here in Northeast Wisconsin. And one of the people who works for and with you, Justin Schumacher, actually was a guest on my
show early on.
Right. Yeah. And he is a young, bright, he's got so many great, exciting things about it, visions of what he would like to see in the region.
So I think as, you know, unfortunate as things have been nationally, I think it's very important to recognize that we have great young leaders, not just in elective offices, but people who are directly involved in our community. So in case of Justin, he's our parks director and he's unveiling a dog park. We are
pickleball. You know, there's pickleball.
We have pickleball court. Of course, pickleball. You know, pickleball court. And we have Plowman Park, which we've built and added on there too. So a lot of really exciting people. So the ethos of this community spirit is still alive and well, and that today's politics has not gotten the current and future generations down. And that's a good thing.
It's a very good thing. And we're going to talk more about the future. In the future. But first, I just want to reset us. I'm talking with Tom Nelson here. He is the Outagamie County Executive, and he is also the author of the new book, Wrecked, The Edmund Fitzgerald and the Sinking of the American Economy. So bring us back to the leadership, the justice piece, your fascination with the Edmund Fitzgerald and the music that goes along with it. How does that influence the way that you do your job every day, the vision you have for the people of Outagamie County and beyond, really?
I think what's important is the case of the Edmund Fitzgerald really animates that dynamic. And people who are in the assembly or Congress, at the local government, we look a lot of times at the policies, the laws, the figures, the numbers. But behind those numbers are real people and real challenges that we are working on to try to fix. And I think what's exciting about the Fitzgerald story is it's emblematic of the struggles that families, that working families faced in the 1970s and unfortunately continue to face today. So for me, it's a reminder. It puts a real human face that when you, you know, especially folks that get on a Madison who might get, you know, just it's a very difficult politically, what's important about cases and stories like the Fitzgerald is to remind you why you got in public service in the first place, that you're making, you're trying to make a difference for the, you know, for the Fred Armagosts, you know, people like that, that have really suffered. And not just those folks though, but future generations.
This was not your first foray into writing a book. And this was not your first foray into sharing a construct about social justice that works in the region where you grew up and ties deeply into your own history. Tell us.
All right. So what got this going is, I mean, I'm not, you know, an author by trade, of course, but when I ran for the U.S. Senate and I decided sometime around 2019 that it was very likely I was going to do that, I thought about, okay, let's get something down on paper. Okay. Let's have a coherent, you know, policy and plan and story that I could take around the state. And so I looked to the work that I did with the mill workers in combined locks back in 2017 when the Appling Coated Mill was going to be shut down and it was sold and it was shut down. And then a bunch of us got together, objected to the sale to the scrap dealer, and we prevailed on a judge to give the mill a second chance. And we turned it around. It is alive and well today, supporting about 300 jobs. And so I took that story and I used it to talk about the paper industry. And then from there, it went from like a white paper to a long form magazine to to a published book. And so it was a way for me to bring these threads together to tell the story, but then also explain the significance behind the story itself. So in that case, I talked about how we could make this tripartite partnership between government, management, and labor to do some really good things. And that's exactly what we did with Appleton Coated. So my book, One Day Stronger, addresses that facet too.
I love that, having grown up in Kakana, not so far away from where you grew up, but recognizing that. I remember teachers in the high school saying, use all the paper you want. We're the paper valley. Like, this is good for business. But really just understanding how important the paper industry is to this little part of the world. Mm-hmm. And how preserving the paper industry, we need paper, how preserving that is, those are our jobs, those are our communities, those are our families who have mm-hmm. been here for generations in many cases.
Yeah, and you know, this is not just about Green Bay or Appleton, and certainly not just Milwaukee and Madison, though, but in the case of Kakana or Little Chute, or with the Appleton Coated Mill, with Combined Locks. Combined Locks is a very small community of about 2,000 or 3,000. To put in context what the Appleton Coated Mill meant to Combined Locks is every year about $350 million of economic activity was generated by that mill. So mm-hmm. imagine $350 million coming in and out of a community of 2,500 every single year. And you can multiply that by dozens of Appleton Coateds all across the state and all across the country, whether it's in paper or machine tools or you name it.
Yeah, and demonstrating how you can fight for it. Mm-hmm. You don't just have to give in because the mill is closing. You can fight back. No, you can come together. You can organize. You can create that future.
Yeah, what really kind of ticked me off is you had these legislators and they refused to respond to calls. Mm-hmm. And the Governor Walker, didn't do anything about that either. And so we were basically left by ourselves to figure this out on our own.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk more about that when we come back for our last segment. This is Dr. Kristen Lierley with Tom Nelson. You're listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show.
The dawn came late, represent the wind.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
The legend lives on from the Chippewa on down, or the big lake they call Gitche Gumee.
You're listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I am Dr. Kristen Lierley, and we are just listening to covers of the Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
All day long. I love it.
I'm sitting here with Tom Nelson. He just wrote this amazing new book called Wrecked, the Edmund Fitzgerald and the Sinking of the American Economy. It is about the tragedy, but it is also about the tragedy that led to the tragedy, what was happening in the manufacturing economy and is still happening now, lessons to be learned, so many stories. During the break, we were talking about just the different ways that the families have dealt with the tragedy and the families that are adjacent to the tragedy have dealt with it. There's so much more to unpack here, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, we could go on and on about that. And that's why I wrote a book, because I was just doing some initial research and there's just so much to this. And it really is unfortunate that 50 years later, there have really not been any books that have really, you know, dived into this and to look at what is the significance of this. Yes, this is this well-known, folk song by Gordon Lightfoot, but there's more to this. There's more to the song.
I mean, the first cover that we listened to is a Canadian band. This last one was the Long Johns. They're a British band. And they're actually going to be, we should go, to the Crystal Grand in the Dells in October.
Oh my gosh. And they'll probably do the song too.
I bet they will.
And did you know that when Gordon Lightfoot was touring, he went to his first stop in Duluth after the ship sank and he was singing that song. He was actually booed.
Really?
Because they looked at him, here you are, you're making money off of this tragedy.
Oh,
and
yeah.
At that point, he decided that he was going to donate all the proceeds to the families. And so he has not made any money off of that song.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Hey, I have to tell you, I don't know if you know this, but when I work in Minnesota, I work on the Iron Range. I work in Hibbing.
Oh, really?
Yes, which has the largest open taconite pit. It is a spectacle to see. But those people up there are hearty salt of the earth.
They work hard.
They work hard. They are not fancy, and they are incredibly practical.
Yeah, you have not seen hard work until you've seen people working in taconite mines and guys that are, you know, on the ships in the Great Lakes. It's just folks like that, you know, we need to recognize more.
We need to ensure that the economy works for them and their families and the communities where they live.
And we need to make sure that we constantly do right. You know, we have to make sure that these are safe working sites. the Fitzgerald did not have any navigational equipment when they were out there. In fact, two of the radars that they used to communicate were both down. So they didn't have these weather stations. It was simply communicating between ships. And so the Fitzgerald was ahead of the Anderson, the Arthur Anderson, and they were trailing a few miles behind. And since the storm was coming from the west, it was hitting the Anderson. And so as the storm hit Anderson, they signaled to the Fitzgerald, you know, this is coming, you know, expect this and so forth. And so that was really the only source of information McSorley and the crew had to work on. Of course, that was changed because they realized, yeah, we should have some basic navigation equipment. We should have fixed stations to relay, you know, changes in the weather. And they didn't. And in fact, the map that they were using to navigate, look at this, I'm giving everything away. I'm going to stop right there.
But I'm sure people, this is a captivating story, as we have said many times. And I'm sure people are interested in reading your book. So where can they find it?
Okay. Well, of course, you can go to Amazon. You can go to Michigan State University Press, which is my publisher. I should give a plug to them. Thank you very much, Michigan State University. They took this project on and very early and saw this significance, and they support us every step of the way. But what I would encourage people to do is, you know, not just go to Amazon though, but go to the websites of your local bookstore, because most of them will be able to order it online for you. But what's good for me is that when they hear from a customer asking about Wrecked, the Evan Fitzgerald and the Sink of the American Economy, they won't just get one. They'll say, oh, that's interesting. I should get four or five. And so it's advantageous for authors to direct readers to local bookstores for that reason. And of course, it is so important to support. And around here, I'm going to be at Lion's Head November 15th. Lion's Mouth. I can't believe I said that. There's my bookstore or something. Oh, great. I'm going to have to make this up somehow. So
we love Lion's Mouth.
Yes,
they're amazing.
Lion's Mouth.
Right downtown Green Bay. Yes.
And this coming weekend, I will be in Superior, Spooner, La Crosse, and Spring Green. And so I'm starting at the point where the Fitzgerald set sail on November 9th, 1975, actually just a few blocks away from the port. And from there, I'm going to Spooner and then to La Crosse and then Spring Green. So that's kind of like the first leg, hitting Western Wisconsin. I have an appointment with the Bay Area Divers in Sandusky, Ohio.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's not just in, you know, Wisconsin. It's getting all over the Great Lakes.
Uh-huh. Because that's near where the destination of the Edmund Fitzgerald was.
Yes, Toledo.
Fantastic. So if people are interested in finding you, you just like very kindly enumerated where you were going to be, but is there a website? Is there a Facebook page? How can they track you?
Yeah, go to my Facebook page, which is still Nelson4WIR. WIFORWI. So I have all the updates of where I'm going to be. Some reviews. We're already getting reviews on the book. The Progressive had a really nice write-up. Bill Luters, thank you very much. And we have some more coming down the pike too. So all of those will be from my Facebook page.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I really love about this book is, and you mentioned this earlier, it's peer-reviewed. This isn't like a fluffy book.
No, it's not. No, I mean, I had to work hard on this. You'll see too. I mean, there will be parts of the book where I really go deep into a literature review. Like I, reference, you know, this economist, this historian, and you might look, do we need like a fourth quote on this? That's because you need to have ample research and work done in citations or to be peer reviewed and to pass peer review.
And you're drawing a big analogy here between this tragedy that affected the entire country and what has been happening with our manufacturing economy, which is so important for us to understand. Tom Nelson, author of Wrecked, the Edmund Fitzgerald and the Sinking of the American Economy. Thank you, my friend, for hanging out
online
today.
Here you go. And this is going to be the first signed copy I will be giving to Kristen, but I have to sign it first.
I can't wait to read it. Oh, thank you. All right, friends, thank you for tuning in today. Let me know what you want to talk about, who you want to listen to, and message me on all the socials. And if you missed any of our conversation, you can always listen back wherever you get your podcasts. See you next time.
The national news cycle never stops. but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.